Everyone, thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. It's May 2018, and you're listening to episode 70 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Daniel Motley. Daniel is a product manager for Faith Life, and they are the makers of Logos Bible Software. He also holds an advanced MDiv from Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and is a freelance writer for many online outlets, including The Gospel Coalition and Christ and Pop Culture. Daniel wrote a Postmodern Realities article in the Volume 41, Number 2 issue of the Christian Research Journal, and it's called Two or More, Christian Polyamory's Problematic Theology. Daniel, it's good to have you on.
Thanks, Melanie. It's good to be here.
Well, this, I never thought we'd be actually talking about Christian polyamory, but polyamory's kind of become more of an accepted practice. As a matter of fact, I was recently reading an article in the New York Times. They have this column in their lifestyle section called Modern Love, and it's all kinds of things. It's not just romantic. It could be about kids or parents and so forth. But they recently had one about a woman in a relationship, and they were practicing, you know, polyamory, and it was new to her. And it just sounded so incredibly sad. But for some of our listeners, they might not know the difference between polyamory and, for example, polygamy. So could you tell us the differences between the two, and what is polyamory?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, we need to see polyamory as more of an umbrella term, and polygamy and other types of polyamorous relationships are kind of in that. So polyamory being a broad category, there are other relationships in that broad category. So people be familiar with polygamy, swinging, polyfidelity. So polygamy obviously being a marriage among multiple people. Swinging is more like swapping wives or swapping husbands. Polyfidelity is more of, if you're in a relationship, as long as people are consenting to be within that relationship, everything's okay. And those are just three among others. But it's certainly not cheating. So cheating is considered by most polyamorous theorists to be breaking that consensual relationship that's present within the group. So it's definitely out of bounds for a polyamorous relationship. But essentially, polyamory covers any relationships that are consensually agreed upon between more than two adults. And that's how I've defined it in that article. I based that off of a lot of research from polyamorous theorists and those who are against polyamory, but have spent the time looking into this and want to understand it more.
Yeah, that's a helpful distinction. I know when I was reading that article, the way that they were just, the author, who is a woman, was describing it was, this boyfriend that she met was saying that he still has relationships with past exes, girlfriends, and he still maintained those. I don't know if on her part she was agreeing to it, but it sounded like it was very different than the 70s, I guess. That was kind of when swinging was kind of reaching its height. And that seemed like it was a little bit more anonymous, like you got together with maybe acquaintances, but this seems more like an established practice. Is that correct?
Yeah, a bit more established. And there's a bit more to it. Like swinging is definitely more. I mean, when you think of swinging, like from the 70s, you see as like at this big party where people go and just throw their car keys in, and you go and you pick car keys out, and you just go home with whoever. But polyamorous relationships are a bit more thoughtful, a bit more less focused on sexual relationships, even though that's obviously a part of it, and more focused on the romantic relationships within. And in a polyamorous relationship, not everyone is that has to be in a relationship with every other person in it. So, for example, person A can be in a relationship with person B and C, but person B may not be in a relationship with person A, but they are in a relationship with person C. So it's definitely it's but it's all based on a like a consensual relationship, and that's what distinguishes this from other types of like either cheating or just basically swinging. Even though swinging again is underneath the polyamory kind of umbrella.
Well, I'd like to have you describe a little bit more about the history of polyamory, and specifically its acceptance by non-Christians. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about later, specifically your articles about Christians who practice polyamory. But why don't you just kind of give us the overview of the history of this practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So polyamorous relationships are really as old as human history is. I mean, we've found evidence going back thousands of years to some of the early civilizations for these polygamous practices. If we're just going to start with the Old Testament, even like Old Testament patriarchs practiced polyamorous relationships. For example, Abraham, he took Hagar as a relationship within his kind of marriage relationship, even though he wasn't married to Hagar. And Old Testament law certainly made allowances for men to take multiple wives. And we can assume that other ancient Near Eastern cultures had adopted this practice as well. And then we see African and Asian countries that practiced this in times past, though especially in Asian countries, it was the domain of the upper classes. So what you would see is the upper class men, usually emperors or their underlings, taking multiple wives, but that practice didn't apply to the lower classes. And then you would see Arabic countries, both before and after the rise of Islam, practicing polygyny or the taking of multiple wives. But Islam banned polyandry, which is the taking of multiple husbands. So it wasn't a two-way street for the Arabic world, especially when the Islam dominated. And if you fast forward to the present day, we can see kind of the sexual revolution and the free love movement really making headway for polyamorous arguments. But it wasn't really until this relatively new language of consent being the central argument around which all else revolves that polyamorous were able to solidify their reasoning for living in this arrangement, making it acceptable to people who would then become allies. So whenever this language of consent actually showed up, maybe around the 90s, we started to see more and more people rally around this concept, because before it was more of a, okay, that's kind of an offshoot of this sexual revolution movement. But when the consent language entered in, people started to take polyamorous seriously. As being like, okay, this is obviously a legitimate part of our free love or sexual revolution movement. And those are kind of, that's where we see polyamory coming into its own today.
So basically consent would be, if we agree to it, any kind of romantic or sexual practice is fine as long as all the parties agree. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. As long as you are able to consent and you give that consent, then anything within this relationship among multiple adults is okay. Obviously, they would see anything outside of that as amounting to a slippery slope argument. So obviously, children as romantic partners or any kind of non-human persons is obviously out of bounds, because consent can't be gathered.
What about consent for, in our laws, we have people who are older teenagers. Would they consider, as long as somebody who is 17 consenting to being in a relationship with someone who's 19, it's okay, even though laws would say it's not permissible till 18?
That actually depends on the person arguing. I wouldn't say that everyone would say that's okay. However, we have seen movies. There's a new movie that came out recently. I think it's called Call Me By Your Name, in which an older teenager enters into a relationship with a person in their young 20s. And this is a same-sex relationship. And that scene is okay. And that's been actually heralded as being an okay relationship, but it just depends on who's arguing. But it does seem that there's at least a sector of those people who argue for polyamorous relationships who would see that as okay.
Yes, just so our listeners know, that's a recent art house movie that was based on a book by the same name. And yes, it involved a 17-year-old protagonist with a 24-year-old college student or a graduate student. Well, I can't believe I'm asking you this, because it would seem to me that Christians would oppose polyamory, but the point of your article is to kind of refute Christian polyamory. So when did some Christians begin accepting polyamory as a viable Christian sexual ethic?
I mean, we've been seeing arguments for non-traditional Christian relationships really after the sexual revolution and the free love movement. But it wasn't really until after Obergefell that we saw a number of arguments, or at least that I saw a number of arguments for Christian polyamory take place. They borrowed the language of those who were arguing for gay marriage from a Christian perspective and applied it to these Christian polyamory relationships. And since the language was already there, it was much, much easier for them to kind of sneak it in the back door, so to speak, for arguing for these Christian polyamory relationships. And which most of these arguments are based off this ethic of love, found almost entirely centered upon Jesus's love ethic in the New Testament. And so whenever it was taken from gay rights activists, Christian gay rights activists, with this language of love, it was much easier for them to say, like, oh, turn around and say, hey, you know, it applies for, obviously it applies for gay marriage, and that's good and right. But it should also apply for those who are living in loving, committed Christian relationships as well, that are more than just one to one, but one to two or three or however many want to be in this relationship. And that was pretty easy for them to move from one to the next.
You just mentioned Obergefell. Can you tell our listeners what is that?
Obergefell is the case that came before the Supreme Court in 2015, or at least they made the judgment in the summer of 2015 that said that gay marriage is now legal for people of same-sex relationships. So before that, one could enter into a civil partnership and get benefits that way, or at least some benefits that way. But now those who are of same-sex, who have same-sex attraction or are in same-sex relationships are able now to enter into marriage partnerships the same way that those of opposite-sex relationships or heterosexual people can enter into. So that was it was a groundbreaking decision. It changed social practice for a lot of people just kind of in one foul swoop. And it was controversial for Christians, but obviously a huge win for gay rights activists.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest, Daniel Motley, wrote a Postmodern Realities article in the Volume 41, Number 2 issue of the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called Two or More, Christian Polyamory's Problematic Theology. To read his article, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50, and to subscribe online, please go to our website, equip.org. Can you tell us who some of the modern proponents of Christian polyamory are?
Yeah, absolutely. So a number of people that I've been reading recently who are arguing for this polyamorous, this Christian polyamorous position are Jeff Hood. He is a pastor or a social activist in Texas who formerly went to the exact same seminary that I did, except he went there a few years before I did. I'm not sure if he's a graduate, but he did attend the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary at least up until 2008. And he's been arguing pretty regularly for the inclusion of Christian polyamorous couples into the full fold of the church and arguing on their behalf, even though he himself is not a polyamorist. He's arguing on their behalf in order to have a wider acceptance among Christian culture. He's interviewed a number of people on this, and he's had different people on his podcast or on his website interviewing them, talking about polyamory and trying to figure out a way forward for them that's rooted not just in language of consent, but it's also rooted in language of Christian love and Trinitarianism, and just looking for robust arguments that are not just non-Christian arguments, but that are definitely centered in Christian theology and history. And then I've seen a number of articles from those who are really more progressive Christians who are trying to make sense of the progressive Christians who are trying to make sense of this relatively new way of understanding relationships. And one of the main ones one of the main advocates for polyamory right now is actually Chuck McKnight. He blogs over at Patheos. And he, at the Hippie Heretic, that's the title of his blog. And he has recently entered into a polyamorous relationship, he's recently opened up his marriage to the idea of polyamory. He and his wife have consented to that. And he has been basing a lot of his arguments in Christian theology and a reinterpretation of Christian history and Christian theology. And that's where I originally got the idea for writing about it, because I saw that I found that as being kind of the next shoe to drop after the Obergefell decision. And I thought it was time to start talking about it. Because if we don't start talking about these issues now, we're going to be behind once these issues start taking off. And they almost always start to take off.
I know. I can't believe I'm actually asking you this question, because it just seems so counter to what we understand theologically of a Christian biblical sexual ethic. But how accepted is the idea of polyamory among Christians today?
Well, it's obviously, like I've just kind of stated, it's starting to take off a little bit. You're seeing more and more blog posts and more kind of books being written about Christian sexual ethic from a non-traditional standpoint. A number of blogs that I read are relatively recent. I mean, they've started to come out starting in 2016 and moving forward. It's not like it's just rampant. The Christian church isn't going to see just this wild takeoff of Christian polyamorous, you know. You're not going to see in rural Alabama, you know, just everyone starting to get up and be like, you know what, Christian polyamory is right, and I'm going to start going after it. But what you do see is, you know, dominoes start to fall into place. You see people start making these little concessions. And before too long, you do start seeing people in your pews, because it will move from the academy or from the blogosphere down into the churches. We will start to see more and more people start to accept arguments and be like, oh, okay, well, that's kind of what I believed all along. Now I have Christian justification for it, so I'm going to move on it. And so we would definitely want to be proactive as it's becoming even more accepted in the Christian church. But as of right now, it's not huge, but it's going to get there. There was one point in which arguments for homosexuality among Christians was very minimal. And now here we are today.
So how would Christian polyamorists, you just touched on a little bit, but how do they specifically argue their position and justify it, they would say, biblically?
Yeah, so the easiest way to argue for polyamory from a Christian perspective is to point at the New Testament and say, hey, look, Jesus is a loving, he's a loving man. He loved others unconditionally. And so we need to love others conditionally as well. He didn't judge people based on their sexual ethic. We see a number of stories throughout the Bible in which Jesus goes up to different people of different backgrounds and persuasions and different even sexual preferences, whether they're the woman at the well or whether it's, you know, or whatever. And he loves them. He doesn't judge them. He doesn't say anything about being against polyamory, or he doesn't say anything about being against homosexuality. And so therefore, we're able to actually enter into these relationships because Jesus doesn't actually condemn them. And then from there, for instance, Jeff Hood, he talks in one of his articles on one of his blogs about the Jesus love ethic. And then he has an interviewee ask him about, well, what about Paul? And he essentially just calls Paul a bigot and just completely writes off Paul. He says, I don't think Paul's a very good representative of Christianity, which is problematic for a number of reasons, but that's usually the argument. And then one of the newer ways that I've seen Christian polyamorists argue is to point to the Trinity as one of the reasons why polyamorous love can exist, because the argument from their argument goes, since there are three within the Trinity who love each other and love each other unconditionally, there's not a one-to-one, there's obviously three in a relationship, why can we not model that in our marriage covenant relationships or just in our relationships in general? There's no reason not to. If God himself can do that, then why can't we? And that's a relatively new argument. Kind of persuasive on the if you're looking at it from just kind of like a top level, you know, kind of like a thin soil level look at it. But when you go a bit deeper, obviously that argument doesn't quite pan out. And we could talk about that in a minute. But those are the two main arguments that Christian polyamorists use. And many people have found them convincing. But again, I don't think they hold up upon further inspection.
So please do explain to us, like, what are some good biblical arguments against these views that you just described from Christian polyamorists?
Right. So the main problem with these arguments from Christian polyamorists is that they just don't go deep enough. We don't just have the words of Jesus kind of, out of their context. And we also don't just have you know, the parts of the Bible or Christian theology out of context. Like, Christian theology is not just, hey, here's the Trinity, or hey, here's Jesus's words. Like, Christian theology is like is a whole thing that we have to make sure that we keep in view when we're making arguments for or against really anything. So when we look at the words of Jesus, Jesus isn't just talking kind of off the cusp without any kind of context. Jesus, when he's talking about love or he's talking about marriage, like, he's rooted in this ancient tradition passed down to him from the Old Testament prophets, from Moses and all the way down to him. And so when he speaks in context of love, or when he speaks in context of marriage, he's not just creating something new. He might be renewing it and revitalizing it, but he's not doing anything new. And so when he talks about marriage as being the union between one man and one woman, he's not just coming up with some cute new idea. Like, he's basing that in Genesis 2:4 when he talks about when the writer of Genesis talks about a man and a woman shall come together, become one flesh. Like, that's a very monogamous concept. That is a very monogamous idea. One man and one woman coming together. So Jesus is just carrying along the tradition of the Old Testament at that point. So Jesus isn't doing anything new or even breaking Old Testament covenant. He's renewing it. He's revitalizing it, bringing it into this new context of himself even. And then if you want to move into just this Trinitarian language that Christian polyamorists use, well, I mean, the Trinity is obviously the centerpiece of our theology. But God has also revealed himself to be a covenant God. God himself is not just just this nebulous being that loves indiscriminately because of no context. No, that love is in a covenant. Like, God is in a covenant with his people, and God loves his people with a transforming love. God doesn't just love people where they are just to leave them where they are. God loves people where they are so he can transform them into his image, which is a good and holy image. And I think that's one thing that Christian polyamorists just don't. They don't take it to its conclusion. They don't run after where it's leading, where theology is leading, where Jesus' words are leading, and that's what gets them astray. And so, one thing that I hope to see from those who are arguing against Christian polyamory is that we take into account the whole counsel of God, whether it comes to the words of Jesus or the Bible or Christian theology itself, because there's a whole lot to unpack. And once we do unpack it, we start to see these polyamorous arguments start to fall off pretty quickly.
Now, you just mentioned taking into account the entirety of the Bible. So how would you answer those Christians in the past who've argued in favor of polygamy, for example, you mentioned earlier, just based on some of the Old Testament relationships that we saw with some of, you know, the people back in Genesis, like Abraham, you mentioned, and a whole bunch of other people, David, for example, Solomon, who had multiple wives. So how do you answer that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And obviously, that's something that polyamorous will bring up. The answer to that is that, and it's difficult, but one of the things that Jesus does whenever he does come is that he is doing something new. He's instituting something new. He's bringing the kingdom, the already kingdom, but the not yet kingdom. And he is abolishing in a way, he's not abolishing the law, but he's making it stronger. And so what we see in the Old Testament law, and then Jesus even mentions this, is that these laws for divorce and for marriage outside of one man, one woman were given because of weakness and not because of any kind of desire on God's part as being normative. And so what we see with these polyamorous relationships are like just is because of a kind of weakness. And what Jesus is saying is that monogamy is the actual normative idea that God has always instituted and always has wanted. But because of the weaknesses of the kings and because of the weaknesses of the patriarchs, he gave the okay for multiple wives for a time. And even Paul talks about the law being a pedagogue or a teacher or a guide in his epistle to the Galatians. The law as it stands in the Old Testament wasn't meant to stand forever. It was merely meant to bring us to Christ. And Christ has now come and not abolished the law, but has made it stronger. The original law being that monogamy is the normative pattern for sexuality for all people, obviously for Christians being, you know, who we're talking about.
I know sometimes people don't recall certain parts of scripture that address things that we now find normative, like divorce, because in the Old Testament it says in Malachi that God hates divorce. So I think you're right. We live in a very broken world, and I don't think that that is exactly what God had set up, because what he set up in Genesis, as you mentioned, was a relationship, an exclusive relationship, a husband and wife, one man and one woman. Back with Adam and Eve.
Right.
Well, if there's two Christians who are currently engaged in polyamorous practices, and maybe they're convicted by some of our discussion here today on this podcast, what advice do you have for them?
Well, first of all, if you're involved in a polyamorous relationship, but you've been convicted, the fact that this is not God's normative pattern, the road ahead is going to be difficult, obviously, because what's happening now is untangling these relationships that have been built up. The assumption is that everyone in this polyamorous relationship isn't going to agree with the fact that you've come to believe in the normative pattern for sexual relationships as God set up in the Bible. And so one thing to do is just discuss with your partners, hey, I've been convinced of this. I can no longer enter into this anymore. And it's going to be difficult. And I recommend finding a good church to join to enter into a covenant with those people as a church member, and to talk through those issues with your local church to figure out what's the best way forward. And especially if you have children that are involved in these relationships, because a number of these polyamorous relationships involve children as well. It's going to be a difficult time to untangle the knots of the relationship and how this works to make it more conform with God's pattern. But the local church is going to be the best spot for you if you're wanting to move forward in faithfulness to God's plan. So definitely get hooked up with a local church in your area. Hook up and make sure that you're meeting with your pastor regularly. Make sure you're meeting with other faithful members of the church regularly to make sure you're gaining strength. And make sure that you're digging into your Bible and understanding the words of Jesus and getting power from the Spirit. There's just a number of things that need to happen at that point. But your local church is going to be your best resource for moving forward.
Well, speaking of the local church, you know, you said currently Christian polyamory isn't, you know, just a giant movement, but it's, you know, going to probably take some root based on some of, you know, these arguments that are out there that people discover. So what recommendations do you have for people in local churches that are dealing with polyamorous couples, whether or not they confess to be Christians? There could be some polyamorous couples that are coming to, you know, wanting to seek God or trying to find out more about Christianity, and they end up at your local church. What's advice that you have?
So a number of people who are working in churches, maybe you're a pastor, maybe you're a teacher, you're probably listening to this podcast and think that's probably not going to happen here. And the problem with thinking that is when you think it's not going to happen, that's usually when it does happen. So it's good to be proactive about thinking through these issues and how you and your church is going to respond to couples who come to you and say, you know, we've been in this polyamorous relationship. We came to church last Sunday. We've been thinking through the issue. We think that it's wrong and we want to move forward. Or if you have someone in your congregation who comes, or you know of someone who maybe you visited or just know of, and they're in polyamorous relationships, but they're not convinced that the Christian the normative pattern for marriage is true, you're going to need to think through how to move forward with that. And one of the ways to do that is just to be proactive in understanding, first of all, what it means to believe in Christian, you know, the normative pattern for Christian sexual ethic, to preach on that, to teach on that. And second of all, when you encounter people that are in those relationships, like, don't write them off as being, don't write them off as just being weird. Like, that's not the right way to move forward with people, is just to write them off. So definitely enter into their lives, love them, talk to them, understand where they're coming from. If they are seeking to move forward in faithfulness towards a monogamous relationship out of polyamory, then just step in and move with them the whole way. Like, don't just push this away and say, like, well, maybe if this relationship, or if these people just figure out how to get out of this relationship, then we'll come alongside of them and help them and love them. No, you have to step in and do the hard stuff. And so make sure that you're inviting them to your either Sunday school or your church group, or making sure that you're visiting and making sure that you're, if they're having problems, to talk to them about it, because these are people. Ultimately, at the end of the day, these are people whom Jesus loves, and he calls you to love them as well. So don't be afraid to step into messy. Don't be afraid to step into what you think might be strange or out of bounds, because these are the people that Jesus called to himself.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Daniel. So, Daniel, cookies or cake?
Oh, absolutely cake. Cheesecake. Oh.
Are you an early bird or a night owl?
I am an early bird, and my wife hates that.
I'm an early bird, too. Call or text?
Text, because I am an introvert.
And I mentioned that you work for Faith Life, and it's located in Washington State. So what's one of your favorite things about the Pacific Northwest?
It's absolutely gorgeous. My goodness. Like on our west side, we have the big bay that runs into the Pacific Ocean. On the other side, we have mountains. I mean, we literally could not find a better spot. Both my in-laws and my own parents, whenever they come to visit, they're like, well, this is just the prettiest state in the United States. And I have to absolutely agree. It's gorgeous up here.
Well, thanks, Daniel, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Well, thanks, Melanie, for having me. It was my pleasure.
Today's guest, Daniel Motley, wrote a Postmodern Realities article in Volume 41, Number 2, issue of the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called Two or More, Christian Polyamory's Problematic Theology. To read Daniel's article, please subscribe to our journal, and a 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50. And to subscribe online, please visit our website, equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media. Like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. Follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes and rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others find our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Hank is also live streaming each week on Facebook and YouTube, so check equip.org for dates and times. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's new audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.